There is a very poetic section in Parshas Chukas. It's the Shira, the water Shira. But it isn't the Shira Sayam, which is extensive and, excuse the pun, copious. It's a very, very brief, succinct Shira. Not about the splitting of the waters, but about the water, the miracle, miraculous water that had accompanied them throughout the Midbar, the Be'er. And it describes various topographies that this rivulet or water source, cistern of water, a rock that produced water, this miraculous water base, the Be'er of Miriam, accompanied them throughout the desert. So the Torah describes that it was in the desert and it was a gift. Umi Midbar Matana, Umi Natana Nachali El, didn't just produce a cistern of water, but it was almost a river that flowed presumably throughout the entire camp. So it's a very pastoral scene, as if they were sitting by the banks of the river Nachal. Nachal is a river, Nachali El. And even when they ascended dunes and higher altitudes where you wouldn't expect this water to be available, the water itself ascended with them, Uminachliel Bamos, and it reached even these little cliffs or plateaus, Hagai, and then down to the valley underneath those plateaus. Now Chazal saw this, of course, because it's water, and because it's the gift of the desert, Umimidbar Matana. So Chazal saw these three or four verses as a expose or a metaphor for Torah. And there's a very interesting Gemara in Erevin on Daf Nun Dalet, a very famous Gemara in Erevin. Keep in mind, the altitudes are shifting. It starts in a desert, which tends to be a low valley. At some point, it ascends to a bama, to a cliff, to a plateau, to a precipice. It's not the apex of a mountain, it's not the apogee, but it's still higher summits. And then it descends back into the guy, back into the valley. So there aren't just altitude shifts, but there's a sense of ascent and then descent. Incline and then decline. So Gemara says as follows. Midbar Matana, I'm doing a lot of driving to pick up my children in various places during their summer excursions. So they don't have a Gemara in front of me. But that a person, in order to acquire Torah, has to render himself like a Midbar, like a desert. In order to receive the gift of Torah, you have to be a desert. So the first stage of acquiring Torah, you have to be desert-like. What does it mean to be a desert? It means two or three related attitudes. First of all, first and foremost, humility. Lack of arrogance, cockiness, self-absorption. It's not just a moral prerequisite. Hashem will only deliver the gift of Torah to those who are morally fitting. It's also an intellectual enabler. If you see too much of yourself, you can't really see Devar Hashem. If you can't see Devar Hashem, you won't study Torah assiduously. You won't study Torah with full investment. But it's not just humility. And there are various other metaphors for Torah that capture the humility component. It's also, you have to leave. You can't be part of civilization, of the city, of urban life. There's a certain, in the modern world, it's ironic, but the two mega yeshivas which were formed in the post-World War II Torah world were Panevish and Lakewood. And the Tzad HaShavah, the common denominator, is that in each instance you would think that the yeshiva should be situated in the main city. Where would you think if you just woke up, say you lived in the 18th century and you went to sleep for 200 years and you woke up in 1990 or 2010, and you say, well, where's Panevish? Thousands of people. Or you'd say, well, it's in Yerushalayim. And you'd be surprised to find it's in Bnei Brak. And so where's Lakewood? Where's that great yeshiva-based Medrash HaGedolah? And you'd think it's in New York. And yet it's in southern New Jersey. So you have to walk sometimes the distractions of this world, the comfort of this world. There's a neediness that drives Torah that when you're stripped away, that down to the bone of any even basics, and all you have is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His will, and that's reflective of how Olam Haba will be when this world fades, and the only eternal remnant is Hashem's will. So it's not just the humility of a desert that allows everyone to trespass on it, unlike a hedge of roses that are protected and guarded. But it's also the sparse, Spartan, low-level, rudimentary experience of the desert. I just spent Shabbos with my Shir Dalit Israeli Shir, and we wanted to take a Shabbos together to go away and to have a Shabbos with the Talmidim and the Rebbeim. And we went to this yeshiva in Tekoa. Tekoa is in Mizrach Gush Etzion. And Tekoa is an interesting yeshiva unto itself, but the yeshiva there, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but it's really dilapidated. They're, boys are living out of really run-down dorms, caravans. The Cheder Ochel is really crickety and falling apart, and the base matter is just very, very basic. And I was telling some of the Talmidim that it probably is reminiscent of what Gush was like in 1971. The difference was, in 1971, the entire country looked like that. So Gush was just a reflection of the limited wealth that the country had and the inability to build more comfortable structures. But now the country has progressed, and this is a throwback, and I think it's intentional. I think that you're able to create more of a platform of basic and of lack of too much comfort or luxury, and get to a more basic level of identity and a basic level of Torah internalization. So the seeds of Torah always start with thirst, always start with desire, always start with neediness, with feeling that something has to complete me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word will complete me, and I'm in a desert and I'm thirsty, and Torah, it's very meager and it's very basic. And then what happens is Nachaliel, you realize this is the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Umi Bamos, and you ascend. And that ascent is absolutely crucial, because you realize this privilege to study Hashem's Torah, the privilege to follow Hashem's will. And it should make you feel unique and ennobled. So whether it's the term Segula Mikol Hamim, Hashem treats us like a treasure, a king's treasure, or whether it's the phrase Keser Torah, which the Rambam speaks about so often in Perek Gimel, that a person should feel like their dignity. And without that feeling, I don't think that Torah is sufficiently appreciated. So the next stage of Torah is an ascent, is a recognition that you're living a world and you're tasting immortality, you're tasting eternity. I think the yeshiva world in the early part of the 20th century accentuated this aspect of the role of the yeshiva bachar and the stature of the yeshiva bachar. Reb Lichtenstein always felt that it was a little bit disproportionate, probably in response to the fallen state of the yeshiva bachar after World War I, when economic hardship set in and it rippled across Eastern Europe where the yeshivas were, and yeshivas were always at the bottom of the food chain. But at some level, you should feel proud and v'asas chemakan feinasharim, and above and ascending and beyond the trivialities and pettiness that haunts this world and that shackles people in this world, that you're living in some other sphere. So the ascent is an important ascent, and it both reflects an internalization of Torah, and it also catalyzes the greater thirst for Torah. But at that point, it could turn. It could still maintain humility and simpleness and commonness, or it could become very institutionalized, very supercilious and condescending. And some people feel, and I think there's some justification to that, that at some point in the evolution of the yeshiva world, that there wasn't always a sufficient appreciation for people who weren't part of the yeshiva world, and there may have been a condescending attitude. And it's hard to halt that sense of nobility and not allow it to transform into condescension. And that's what the Gemara in Erevin sees within these pesukim. You ascend the bamos, but if that ascent becomes morally disfigured and morally uncouth, and it ends up being disparaging and discrediting of others, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reduce you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpila. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take you back into that valley. And in many ways, the valley is even deeper than the origins of the desert, at which point this whole odyssey of Torah study begins. And of course, it doesn't have to be an odyssey chronologically. At 12 o'clock, there's one state in it. It's an odyssey in the human identity. People struggle with all these different phases and all these different stages of feeling this thirst and lack of resources, the midbar, and then feeling the nobility, the nachaliel that you've inherited after the Baruch Hu, and that creates a certain ascent of character, bamos. But if that bamos, let me just pull out the see if I remember the language of the Gemara, the im megis libo of HaKadosh, if that person is on the bama, his heart becomes too vain and too cocky and too self-absorbed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpila. There's an interesting Gemara in Erevin. It's based on shifts of altitude, but the shifts of altitude are a metaphor for the shifts of mentality, and whether our mentality is too high and too rarefied when it should be noble and elevated, but it can't be contemptuous of those who aren't